Hello, listeners of the podcast for the universe. Thank you so much. We appreciate all of you out there in the universe. If you guys enjoy this show, and I hope that you do enjoy this show, I do the best that I can to bring you awesome interviews with amazing people, everybody out there doing the best that they can to raise the vibration of the planet. So tune in, go find all of our episodes at energyislovepodcast.com, subscribe anywhere and everywhere that podcasts are available, iTunes, Google Play, you can go find us on YouTube. And as always, we ask that you share the show. Talk to somebody about the podcast, tell them where they can listen, where they can tune in, and share it with them. Thank you, everybody, for supporting the podcast for the universe. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by the wonderful Crystal Water Float Spa located in Tooele, Utah. Crystal Water is the nation's only distributor for the Dream Pod. You can also float in the Dream Pod at Crystal Water. Dream Pods are wonderful, wonderful flotation tanks, sensory deprivation tanks. If you go to dream-pod.com, you can find out more about that tank specifically. And you can also contact Crystal Water Float Spa directly and get your tank shipped out to you here locally within the United States. So it's a wonderful opportunity. Also, if you haven't experienced floating, this is a wonderful opportunity for you to go hop in a tank at Crystal Water Float Spa. Go online to crystalwaterfloat.com or follow them on Facebook at Crystal Water Float Spa. On this episode of the podcast, I got to chat with Lance Foss. Lance is part of the Art of the Float podcast. So this podcast is one of those that we do in regards to floating, but Lance is one of those guys that does a lot of things. We talk about a lot of things, including his own kind of personal spiritual growth and experience and journey that really came into being because of floating. Lance owns a float center up in Red Deer, Alberta, up in Canada. It's the Float Shack. So I know we have a lot of listeners up in Canada. If you guys are anywhere close by, pop in and say hello to Lance and go hop in one of his tanks. I mentioned as well, he's part of the Art of the Float podcast, which is a wonderful podcast all about floating. It's incredibly informative and entertaining, and they do a wonderful job with that show and educating everybody about floating and helping people in the industry of floating. So go to artofthefloat.com. You can listen to their podcast there. They're also available anywhere podcasts are available. And go check out Lance at floatshack.com. In this episode, Lance and I talked a lot about floating, obviously, but also Lance's background was he was a heavy mechanic and worked in the oil fields up there in Canada. And so for him to go from that experience to where he now runs and operates his own float center, it's pretty amazing. It's a wonderful story, and I liked that he was willing to come on and share it with us. So thank you, Lance, for taking the time. Thank you, everybody, for listening and tuning in. Now you get to sit back and enjoy this float story with Lance Foss of the Float Shack Red Deer. It's cold up there, apparently, so who'd have known? But here we go, guys. Sit back and relax and enjoy.
You're listening to the Energy is Love podcast.
Energy is love.
The Energy is the Love podcast.
The Energy is Love podcast.
Energy is love.
The Energy is Love podcast.
The podcast for the universe.
The Energy is Love podcast.
Well, good morning, Lance.
Good morning, Craig.
Thank you so much for taking the time. It's one of those things where we've been trying to hook this up and get this interview set up for quite a while, so I'm glad it finally worked out for us.
Yeah, me as well. I had a great time on your podcast when you were down in Portland, and I appreciate the opportunity and very excited to be back behind the microphone again.
Yeah. So what's it like up in Red Deer right now? How's your guys' weather?
It's cold and snowy, and it's some of those mornings where everything gets a thick ice on the windows, so it's very, I don't know if humid's the right word. There's a lot of moisture that freezes in the air. I don't know. Some mornings you can wake up and your windows are just good to wipe off, but some mornings there's thick ice on there. We're in one of those thick ice kind of times.
How cold do you guys get up there?
Well, in general or this time of year?
Just in general.
It can get really cold. We can get to minus 40. And then you can add windshields on top of that. So that's, or add the wind factor in, and that's, that can make it substantially colder. But I think throughout the winter, we usually average between minus 15. This is in the metric system here. Minus 15 and minus 30. So you add a wind on that and it can get pretty bitter. So.
Oh, that sucks, man. Have you, one thing I forgot I wanted to ask you is, have you, like, are you originally from Canada? You like born and raised up there and everything?
Yeah, I am born and raised in the wholesome city of Red Deer, Alberta, with 100,000 people. So I think when I was born, there's about, I think about 45 or 50,000 people here. So nice. Same little city my entire life. Now I run a float center here.
Well, that's one of the things I want to talk a little bit about first off, because people obviously, if they listen to the episode that we did up at the float conference, and they got a chance to hear a little bit about you and everything, but I want to give you more of an opportunity to talk about the Float Shack. And first off, like, how did you originally come to the idea and the concept of floating, and I'm going to open up my own center and all that kind of stuff?
Cool. Yeah, this all started, I think about 4 years ago, 4.5 years ago, maybe. My business partner, Matthew DeRouge, and I, we were actually heading down the States for some concerts. We're actually following a hip hop artist, and we followed him to Seattle and then went down to Portland. And we had a day off in Portland before we were heading back up to, driving back up to Red Deer. So we decided to rent some bicycles. And when we rented some bikes, we were sort of looking around at some of the stores, some of the glass art around there, and we came across a float studio. And at this point, I knew nothing about floating. When I saw the sign, I couldn't put two and two together. Like, what would you actually do that floats? I didn't know if it was a business that built something, like some sort of tank that, you know, here we're very oil heavy. So first time I heard, float, I imagine some sort of like float tank that you would use to transport water or chemicals or something like that. That's just how my mind was programmed. So, we went in, sort of got the rundown of what floating is, and my mind was sort of just blown. I couldn't understand the concept. I wanted to try it really bad, but unfortunately, we were leaving the next day and they did not have any availability that worked for two people. So we end up sitting on this for a while. Drove back. When I got back to Red Deer, I really dug into the Google, tried to find the nearest float center. The nearest float center was 12 hours away in a place called Abbotsford, British Columbia.
Oh, wow.
It was formerly in a gentleman's basement. A guy named Travis, he runs Cloud 9 Float Therapy still in Abbotsford. But that's where we did our first float. So we actually drove 12 hours to do our first float. We slept in a 7-Eleven parking lot that night. the next day, we sort of stumbled on up to Travis's place and did our floats there.
So you didn't float when you were down in Portland?
No. We didn't have time. We were leaving the next day. We sort of found out about it a little too late, but it sat heavy on my mind for quite some time before we actually did our first float. But that float was interesting, to say the least. There was a lot that happened, and I couldn't really comprehend it. I was never someone to formally ever slow down and spend time with the internal world. I've been a heavy-duty mechanic my entire life. I knew that's what I wanted to do from a very, very young age. I achieved all my goals. I've always been hands-on. Go, go, go. Don't stop. The harder you work, the more you recognize, you know, the better you are. So when I sat in a float tank for 90 minutes with that weird voice and all that action going in my head, I couldn't comprehend it. So
yeah. I think that's the interesting part, because that was one thing, too, I wanted to touch on was your background. I mean, the whole thing of being a mechanic and having that type of, you know, coming from that background and now, you know, running a float center. And I mean, it's completely different.
Yeah, it's two very different worlds. And for a while there, about a year and a half, almost a 2 year gap, I was doing both, working almost a full time job, about 35 to 40 hours a week, and running a float center the other 4 days I wasn't working. So it was a very, very interesting time. But yeah, we knew we needed to explore floating a little more. And so we ended up getting an oasis in our house, Matthew and I. We had intentions to start a float center, but we were starting out with an oasis in the house. So put oasis actually right here where I'm sitting, used to house a float tank. So it's quite interesting, the revolution of my house since I've just started to be an entrepreneur. It's been float tanks and more walls built to fit more roommates to make more money. But we had a float tank here for about 6 to 8 months. And that destroyed my house, ate the laminate, ate the paint. I had a full walk-in, like, 8-foot tile shower. That's completely gone. Still not fixed now. So we knew we needed to start a center. And when we did, we did our construction, planning, design, everything, marketing from the ground up ourselves. And I have no background in construction. None of my business partners did. And we just killed it. Lots of Google, lots of YouTube, and constructed it.
That's a lot of work.
So it was insane. And we were still working jobs at the same time. So extremely long hours. Multiple 20-hour days is not an exaggeration.
Yeah. That's the passion, I think. I mean, I think that's the cool thing is when you start, talking to people in the industry and people that are opening up their own spaces and everything like that. I mean, a lot of times, and it's the same thing with any small business or when you go into business for yourself, it is a lot of work. Mm-hmm. And so for you having, if you floated the first time and then you guys got a tank that you could have in your house and stuff like that, how did you see floating kind of evolve for you personally in a sense where, do you know what I mean? Because the first float always is kind of the crappiest float, but then it kind of expands outwards from there. So how did it kind of, what looking back, what are the things that you can see floating kind of slowly, subtly start to change in you?
Well, I don't know if it was really slow and subtly. Let me go back to my first float here. So we did our first float in Abbotsford and we had to drive back to Red Deer and we knew we wanted to float more and we knew we were going to buy a float tank because we weren't driving 12 hours. Even once a month, driving 12 hours two ways back and forth is not feasible at all. So we had to wait about 8 months before we did our next float. And by the time I said, okay, I need to explore this more because that's an interesting place in the mind and we're going to buy a float tank, I couldn't sleep at night because I was constantly thinking about the float experience and what it would be and how it could help me and how it could help others. So there is a huge gap between I got to do my next float. It was actually my third float that I started to understand what floating was about. I was about sort of, I would say, halfway, two-thirds away into a 90-minute float. And all of a sudden, I was like, I am bored. I am done. I don't get this floating thing. It's not for me. I'm done. And I just let go. I just dropped everything. And I left. I went somewhere. I didn't know where I went, but when I came back and I got that jitter through the body, I knew I found that sweet spot. And I knew as soon as I surrendered and let go to the float, or let go to the experience, I don't know, I guess we can call it a float. It did its job. It showed me what it needed to show. And then I think it was a couple months later, we got our float tank and I was floating almost every single day. And some of them were, long floats, 3-4 hour floats would be sort of a regular thing at that time. Yeah. And I sort of just went deep into the self and started examining, started reflecting, started digging through that mental memory bank that's, we've built up with our entire lives experiences. And
so I want to ask you, prior to that, that third float where you're kind of halfway through the experience where you're able to let go and then, like you said, go to some other place where you can really start tapping into the deeper meaning of life or whatever the case. I mean, we could sit here and get really philosophical about it. But prior to that, when you were floating, was it still just constantly kind of battling back and forth with your thoughts?
No, it was listening to the thoughts and getting to know them and those voices and really not just pushing them off and saying, noise in my head. Nah, I don't need to listen to that. I'll deal with that later. Saying, all right, what you got? Show me. You tell me. It's up here.
And then had you ever experienced anything like that before that? Had you ever had that type of experience where you're in that deep state of whatever it is?
Never.
That's cool.
That was my first time. And that opened my mind to a whole world around me, a whole new dimension, I guess you can say, because everything around me started to change when I started to, well, A, love yourself and get to know that you need to love yourself and you need to communicate with yourself. That started to change everything around me.
Yeah. From
just being someone who operates in the day-to-day norms to somebody who wants to be a creator and builder and make change and actually see that change come to life. So huge change.
That's the neat thing, I think, because you've listened to a little bit of our podcast and you have a good idea of kind of, you know, me and the spiritual aspect of my life and everything like that. And when I came into the realm of spirituality and started to practice meditation and started to do all these kind of different things, I never really had had those experiences either. And then it really, like, you know, really similar to your experience, it forces you into that space where you really start to look deeper into yourself and the meaning behind things and your actions and your choices in life and all the I can't pronounce that word, so I'll skip it. But all the intricate ways that things connect and work. And that's why I like floating so much, because it takes somebody that, you know, maybe never practiced meditation or who's not spiritual in any way, shape, or form. And if they can at least commit to that floating experience and, you know, opening up to it in a sense, it almost undoubtedly will take them to that place.
Yeah, it's almost like an induced, not really induced, but they have all the tools they need to see that plateau. I've seen multiple people come through my center, and some of the most resistant people, my wife brought me here. Not into this relaxing thing. Never been a water person, and just completely, it's hard giving some of these people a walkthrough. Like, you're like, it sort of hurts you. Somebody is telling you they don't want to be in your business and they're in your business and they get in the tank and you expect them to get out 20 minutes later and the time goes by. You know, they come out 90 minutes later and next thing you know, you're their best friend and they're telling you about their marital status. They're telling you about their financial problems and they're just dumping everything on you and they're buying a membership. And it can be that quick for some people, where it's like, I don't want to do this, to, wow, what was that place? What happened? What's going on there? And that feeling after, that amazing feeling. Some people get it the first time. Some people, it takes them quite some time to fully understand what it is. And I think it relies a lot on expectations, for sure. Past experiences, a lot of people, I've had people come in, you know, say, yep, I meditate, I'm a meditator, I understand what this is all about. And they go in the float tank and they come out and say, not for me, I don't like it, it's nothing like what I wanted. And then you'll have the next person that come in and say, it's the most blissful experience in the world. So I think it relies a lot on the, you know, the subjective experiences, what they know about floating and what they're expecting out of it. And sometimes going into it with no expectations can be a very, very beautiful thing.
I think that's almost like that's the ideal thing. You know, we typically try to tell people that, is if, especially if they're not, you know, they haven't ever really heard about it before. Maybe somebody dragged them along or, you know, referred them and said they should go give it a shot. If you do go into that space without any expectations, 9 times out of 10, I think that you're going to come out of it with a better experience.
Mm-hmm.
I know the first time that I floated, I was super excited and I was all ready and I was going to have this huge, deep spiritual meditation and traveled all of these places and it was just miserable.
Yeah.
I really didn't like the first floating experience.
And yeah, that's, I can relate exactly what you said was what I was portraying about some people that I've, you know, met or seen. It's, you know, people are very excited. They, you know, they know what they're getting into, but it's not, you know, what they wanted.
Yeah. One of the favorite, like, because you described the person that comes in who's kind of, you know, the wife dragged them along or whatever, and they're not really excited or open to the idea, but then they come out almost completely changed in a sense. And that's one of my favorite things to watch, where, you know, it's like they come in and they're almost like an asshole in a sense. And they're,
yeah, that's a great way to put it.
Yeah. For some. And they have that kind of, I don't know how to describe it, but they're just, you know, it's like they have this outer shield of protection of I'm an asshole because they have to move through life that way and jobs and work and all these different things. And then when they float, it's like that has the opportunity to kind of be shed and let go of, and you get to see actually the person that they are, I think. Because a lot of times when people come out of the tank, they're more not just relaxed, but they're really more open. And like you said, they're going to sit down and talk for a longer period, and they're going to be much more personable. And I think that's really the core of what people are. And they, you know, we get all these different things that we kind of have to put on in a sense, or choose to put on. And that's why I like, you know, the whole floating thing is so cool, because I love that aspect when you know, that person comes in and they're an asshole, and you're like, undoubtedly they're going to come out and be different. And sure enough, they are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's, you know, some people don't stick around long enough for me to actually interact with them or see that. And I'm curious how many people have, you know, left and completely have had life-changing experiences that derive from, you know, spending that time alone and leaving the float studio and changing their life. I'd love to see how many people the float experience has affected, because it can be something so simple, but it can be something so significant at the same time.
Yeah, for sure. That's the other thing that I think is so neat, is at the core of, you know, floating itself is so basic, so simple. It's two things. You've got water and salt, and then that's it. You just lay back and go into that space. And, you know, anything else that is kind of exists in society and designed to help you relax and all of these different things, a lot of times it seems like there's so much built up around it. And, you know, floating is just so simple. It's one of the most basic things. And, you know, everybody's got salt and water in their body. We're made up of it. And I just think it's beautiful.
Yeah, it is. And for a lot of people, though, it's very strange. It's very weird, especially around where I'm from. So I'm from a very, very conservative, very blue collar, hardworking province. Everyone's like that. Everyone I know we're workaholics. All we do is work. And you tell people, yeah, our floats are 90 minutes. You got to do nothing for 90 minutes. And their jaw almost drops. And we have to explain why we choose 90 minutes out of, you know, why don't you do 30 minutes? Why can't I book 30 minutes if I want to go 90 minutes? And, you know, a lot of people don't understand why you slow down for extended periods of time. And it's good to educate, though, and really get these people in that, you know, would never slow down in their life, because slowing down to them is, you know, having the TV on with their phones in their hand. That's slowing down. But people that would never really disconnect or get away from things can come in, disconnect for 90 minutes that could either feel like it was only 20 minutes or feel like a complete lifetime for them, and want to do that more. I want to slow down more. I want to disconnect from life a bit more. And that's something I've never wanted to do, because I'm always busy. I always work. That's what we do. So,
how long have you guys been open?
Just over 2.5 years.
2.5 years. Have you gotten to that point where, because I think initially, and especially in an area like where you are, there's that whole learning curve of kind of educating not just your customers, but getting your information out there and marketing and everything like that. Have you guys kind of crossed over that hump where you feel like people have a good idea of what it is?
Yes and no. I would say at this 2.5 year point, we've worked really hard to get out in our community and spread our word. But I still think a lot of our community is building some misconceptions or some fears or phobias before ever actually getting in and talking to us or seeing our float tank. So I know we're a pretty common name in the city, and the concept of floating's a pretty – people know about it now. If 3 years ago you had asked somebody – well, it's funny because when – we brought the float tank here, I couldn't find somebody else in the city that knew what a float tank was. So, yeah, 3 years ago, you would ask somebody what a float tank was, they wouldn't know. Now you ask people what a float tank is, and they would know, or they know somebody who's tried it, or somebody's talked about it. And Float Shack is a common name. People will often say they've heard of us, but they don't know where we are. They've never been in. We still have a lot of work to do. And I think anyone to say that they've, you know, fully educated their public at a 2.5 year point would be somewhat out to lunch there, because that's a lot of work to fully educate people on what you do. Our biggest thing is trying to get people into our door to see our space, to feel our space, and to look at a float tank to see it's a lot bigger than I imagined. You know, I imagine that to be a lot smaller, but once they get in, a lot of those fears or phobias or misconceptions are just dropped. So we're sort of at an off the off beaten path a little bit. We don't have a lot of traffic around us. We're just outside the core downtown, right on the river. Not much is really, there's a lot of businesses, but the roads don't really pass us. So it's a lot of work for us to educate our community and actually get them to our door. So it's something we chose. We chose to be off the beaten path to because of the beautiful view and what we're surrounded in, the whole idea of floating. When you come to our location, we want that to be the first step to sort of just leaving the work, the kids, the outside work, or the outside world, just leaving that outside the door. You can come in. We got a serene location that's quiet. There's not ambulances driving by and cars and trains and things like that. So it's a very serene environment. And with that, we took the sacrifice of foot traffic. So,
it's conducive to the whole floating experience and environment. So that's pretty cool. Mm-hmm. You're not stuck in some strip mall where you've got neighbors on each side of you and all that noise and traffic. Mm-hmm. I want to ask you though, because one of the cool things when we met in person up in Portland and everything like that was, you have that vibe or that energy to you, and you're kind of, from my understanding and from what, you know, I've gathered from when we met and kind of kept in touch since Portland and things like that, you're on your own kind of spiritual path and journey. And would you say that floating was the catalyst for that in a sense?
Yes. Floating was definitely a catalyst, because that was my tool to spend a lot of time in a certain mindset. I spent a lot of time in the float tank when I had it at my house. So it was definitely something that's helped me grow and, you know, become who I am today. And it's still helping. I don't get as much as I'd like to when it was in my house. But that's something that as an entrepreneur and somebody who is on their own spiritual path, it's trying to find that balance. Balance is a very hard thing when we're limited to time. So floating, very powerful catalyst for helping me become who I am.
Yeah. So what kind of things have you been doing since we last met? Like, what kind of things do you have in the works? I know that you talked earlier, or not on the podcast, but I knew that you were, because you have the Art of the Float podcast. Obviously, you've got the Float Shack. What are some other things that you've been spitballing around that you're going to start working at?
Yeah, so the podcast, Art of the Float podcast, is a weekly podcast. That has sort of morphed into another project that we have done at Industry Roundtable, where every couple months we'll get anybody and everybody from the industry that wants to join us, basically on one screen with webcams and microphones, and we talk about a set. You know, the first one we did was memberships. So we talked about memberships for 2 hours with everybody in the community and shop back ideas. So that's another project that sort of grew off the podcast. And then, we got the Float Shack. We're running 3 tanks there. And I've also worked with the Float Collective. That is industry's nonprofit association. We're really out here to help the community grow and unify and try and move in the right direction. That takes up a lot of time.
Tell me about that. How did that come to be?
So about two and a half years ago, maybe, there was a few of us float center owners when we were starting our centers, it was still the time where there's not much information out there. You had some scattered YouTube videos. You had some outdated websites with, you know, big gaps in information, and it was just hard to find information. So we got together when we were starting our float centers. There was there's about five of us. And we said, well, we want to create a nonprofit where we can, you know, collectively get together with everyone and help the industry, because when we work together, that's when the magic happens. So then we got to the grind. We originally called it the Canadian Float Collective, as we didn't want to step on any toes of anybody else in the industry. But we have formally or recently in the past 3 months changed the name just to Float Collective. We have dropped the Canadian in front of it because I don't feel like borders need to separate us from our end goals and the direction we're going. So, yeah, we registered the Float Collective as a nonprofit association, and we've done all our board meetings and AGMs and all the fun back end stuff of starting a nonprofit association. It took about 2 years or about a year and a half, I would say, to get all that sort of leveled. When you're working with five or six other people that are also starting their float centers in the first 3 years and doing nonprofit for the first time, there's a lot to learn.
That's a heavy learning curve there.
Yeah, heavy learning curve and time management between six people that are all, you know, running their businesses can be very difficult. So, but yeah, we're at the point now where we've just expanded our board. We changed our view and our mission a little bit. And, this year we just had our AGM on Sunday night. So this year there's going to be a lot coming out from the Float Collective. Hopefully we're going to be a lot more connected with the community, getting feedback, sharing information, spreading information, building documents, working with some health departments, things like that. So
that's super cool, man.
Yeah.
So I want to change gears a little bit, because obviously floating is a huge thing in your life.
Yeah.
Which is a good thing. But I want to talk about the spiritual aspect of you and ways that you, one of the things that you mentioned when you had that experience in the float tank where you kind of left and you went to this place and then you had this like jittery feeling in your body when you kind of came back. Since then, is that something that you kind of experience on a regular basis or have experienced since, I guess?
Yeah, I've definitely, experienced that quite a bit. I would say it's not as alarming or as unfamiliar. It's something being able to sort of leave the physical sensation and go elsewhere.
What do you chalk it up to? Because I want to get your take on it. Because I have my own ideas and my own perspective in regards to kind of what that is. But if you could describe it a little bit more and then your ideas behind it as far as what the hell it is.
Well, yeah, I don't know proper terminology for a lot of this. A lot of this is, I guess you could say, I'm on my own. As you say, spiritual path. And I'm learning a lot of this as I go. When something's new to me, I try to put words to it. I try to explain it. I try to comprehend it. But just slowing down allows me just to leave this world that's constantly being built around me by my past experiences, what other people think, those who surround me, just life in general. Being able to take all that, push it aside, and take all the stuff that normally affect me from there and focus that inward and not deal with, but process everything that's been up here to process. I don't know how else to put that in terminology.
It's difficult, isn't it? Like it's the whole diving deeper into your own psyche kind of thing.
Yeah, there's so much to put to words, and I don't think I've ever worked with putting it to words because I'm not really surrounded by people that are familiar with these experiences and these terminologies and things like that. I'm solely on my own path as I feel it. Like you've said, you know, it's came up multiple times tonight. So,
yeah.
Just not being able to associate or talk to a lot of people about this and share their experiences and things like that has sort of hindered how I can put my experiences to words.
Yeah, that makes sense. So the whole thing where you have that experience inside the tank where, and we'll label it, even though, you know, I think it's asinine to break it down and label it as some specific thing, because this may very well be what it
is.
Please
do. Please do.
So you have an out-of-body experience, essentially, where you travel to some other place, whether you want to think of it as just your mind or your soul or whatever the case may be, but you travel to some other place or dimension. And in that space, you have feelings associated with things that you experience there. You have thoughts that kind of come to you. You have an awareness and a recollection. But then you also have a very physical experience when you come back into your body, where your body will kind of, jitter is a perfect kind of description for it, because your body will kind of shake, almost like you have a chill that runs up your spine. And for me personally, I think that is an out-of-body experience, where you kind of leave your body and your body stays physically wherever it's at, and you're still connected to it in a sense. But the higher consciousness of you travels to some other place where you can access, you know, sometimes it's information about you specifically or the world as a whole, or even deeper meanings of super cosmic, weird, bizarre shit. But have you had, now that you had that experience, or that you've gone through that experience, have you had it outside of the tank? Like, have you had things that you can say were similar to that? Maybe, you know, in a dream state, or I don't know if you started to try to practice meditation outside of the tank or anything like that.
Well, I haven't really had it outside the tank. I have, well, there's been a couple times, but they were sort of, definitely in altered states of mind. I've definitely left my body a couple times, but inside the tank, like when I talked about that first jitter, that was a very light, like just the light shake. I've had out of bodies in the tank where I have been in the tank, looking downward on my body, reflecting on this vehicle that's traveling through this world. And when that has happened, that first time, where I was actually able to look at myself, my body, my meat body floating in the tank, I took a good hard look at myself, and I didn't want that to be the vehicle I was traveling in. So I made huge, drastic life changes after that. I actually lost a bunch of weight. I started eating way better. I started taking care of myself and started appreciating myself. That was a huge, huge one for me, having that out of body in the tank.
That's really cool. That's a neat experience.
It was absolutely fascinating. Nothing still in my life relates to that specific out of body experience, because I felt like that I was there for a long time, and just visualizing and, you know, saying the only person that's going to make this change is you. If you want to make the change, you have to do it. You, just over and over and over. And that I learned a lot from that experience, knowing that, you know, I am the one that changes this world around me. No one's going to do it for me. I have to do it. And there's a lot of motivation behind that, when that travels through almost all aspects of my life.
For sure. It definitely does. So we're going to see, this is the neat thing, Lance, because you have this experience, you have these experiences, you have this insight. And to a certain extent, like for me, I come at it from this really deep connected place of spirituality and my understanding for my own, you know, life and my journey and all that kind of stuff. But it's, you're describing it, and it's really profound, and it's also really deeply spiritual. Like, a lot of people don't ever experience that, can't ever go to that space, and you having been able to go there, experience it, kind of get back to that space, but then also take away from it and benefit and really start to shift and change your life. I mean, I think that's really huge. Even people in the realm of spirituality and people who practice meditation and who believe in chakras and all this other kind of stuff, you know, they don't even get to that point sometimes. They're always kind of chasing that experience, but you've been able to do it and then take away from it. Like, I mean, for me, that's really profound. I think that's really amazing.
Yeah, it's definitely a beautiful space and a beautiful experience. I've tried, you know, when you try to get somewhere like that, well, for me personally, you know, I've wanted to go back to that place. And the more I try, the harder that may feel or become, or the more resistance there is around that. But it goes back to, like I said, about my first float, and it's that surrendering. It's fully letting go. The few times I've been in a space like that, it's always been beautiful, where I can, you know, take lessons from it. But often slips away when I'm back.
Yeah. Would you describe yourself as like a spiritual person, I suppose? I mean, that's a silly label in of itself.
No. I would say yes. Again, you were asked me 3 years ago, and I was in a different dimension, different plane of field. Now I see myself as I wouldn't say very spiritual, but quite spiritual. I'm on a path to learn lots, and I'm in the process of learning lots, and I'm surrounding myself with more tools to allow me to become more spiritual, or be more, I guess that sounds like a bad label as well. To not become more spiritual, just to become more aware.
Yeah.
I guess that's the best way to put it, aware.
One of the things, because I think so many times all the stuff that we talk about on the podcast, and, you know, the guests that will come on and talk about crystals and all these kind of different crazy things, I think a lot of times, and the passion behind the podcast is people get to realize and see that, yeah, there is an aspect of it that may seem crazy and out there, but you're a really good example of just kind of a regular working class kind of guy that started to at least open up his mind to the possibility of something more, and being okay with whatever that more might come as or look at. And then, you know, so I think that's a really important thing. I think that, I just like that, Lance. I think that's a neat thing, because normal people, everybody's normal, right? Well, normal's just a label, whatever the case may be. But if they just realized that, you know, all of this spirituality shit isn't really that crazy and out there and bizarre.
Yeah.
And the more you can open up to it, the more you can kind of benefit, you know?
Yeah. And like you said, it's about opening up to it and about, you know, not dropping that barrier down and saying, okay, I'm going to see what the unknown has to show me and let that tell me, not let others tell me what this is. I spent 8 years right out of high school. I went right in to the big leagues of working as a mechanic in the oil field. And I was surrounded by people that, now looking back, it was constant ego. It was constant being driven by what other people have, and you have to have more than them. And I got stuck in that loop. I was stuck in a loop where it's constantly, I have to buy more than the other people. It has to be better. It has to be shinier. It has to be newer. It has to be this. I was a very, very, very different person. I have a hard time even, you know, going back, thinking to how I treated people, how the language I used, it's hard to reflect on the person I used to be, but then it feels good to know who I am today. My original means for telling you like where I came from is, before starting this float center, before starting floating, before starting to open my mind, I was driven by physical assets, and I didn't understand the concept of time and how valuable time was. And I didn't understand the concept of experience and connecting with others. And you put the time and experience together, and it's a very valuable thing. Over the course of the last 4 years, I've sold off almost all my assets. I have very little things now. The things I do have mean a lot to me. I've actually recently bought a van with my girlfriend, and we're going to go live in a van for a year and travel and experience and do all these things. And before all this, before slowing down, loving myself, exploring the unknown, it was all assets. And I had it all. I had the quads, the trailers, the trucks, the boats, multiples of all those things. And I was never happy. I was never like fully fulfilled to wake up and challenge my day or tackle my day. But now I have way less assets. I care way less about what people think. I love myself more. I'm excited to wake up and tackle my days. And I just want to collect experience and value time. I don't want to collect things.
That's beautiful. One of the things that I'll commonly ask people that come on the show is to kind of go through their own personal spiritual practice, you know, something that they incorporate into whether it's every day or the first thing they do when they wake up in the morning. And so I want to get your take on it. You might not necessarily think of the things that you're doing as your own spiritual practice, but I mean, you've altered and changed your life in so many significant ways from the sounds of it over the past few years. So if you could take a minute and kind of look and see what it is that you've, whether it's just a changing your thought process or the way that you view the world around you, or but could you say, you know, what would be your spiritual practice that's kind of helped you stay in this space?
Breathing. We forget to breathe. We honestly do. Going back to the mechanic thing, I would get a lot of anxiety. I'd get angry. I'd throw wrenches. I was not a nice float center owner. I was a different person. Doing all this, floating, doing breath work. I haven't mentioned that through it, but doing some breath work has allowed me to breathe and focus on breath and be aware of breath and be aware of how important it is to breathe. I wake up, I like to breathe. I like to take some deep breaths and, you know, get that oxygen moving, feel it in my body. Throughout the day, when I start to get really in my head or really worked up, slow down, breathe, be conscious of the breath. For everything, it seems to really help for all aspects of life is learning to slow down that breathing, have better breaths, and yeah, it helps tune everything down.
So will you have moments where you're like, you know, you can feel yourself getting frustrated or anxious or something like that? Will you consciously go to that space where you'll actually just focus on your breath and take some deep breaths and really relax in that space?
Yes, I do now. That's something, again, I never used to do, but now I see how important it is to breathe. But I will consciously slow down and just be aware of my breath and make sure that breath is coming in. I notice when I'm stressed, my whole chest cavity's tight, all my muscles are tight, my neck's tight, everything's tight. And then you pay attention to that and you notice you're not breathing. You're constantly in this like exhale sort of tension.
Yeah.
So just feeling that tension, being okay, oh geez, you're tense, breathe. And you know, just 10 seconds, 15 seconds of breathing can just loosen up everything and mellow me right out, bring me back down to the level I need to be.
It is very, very important. I mean, when you think about, you describe it perfectly, it is important and people don't realize it. And we forget how, you know, everybody always just takes for granted that they are breathing, and they are. Obviously, they're getting enough oxygen to stay conscious. But when you really bring awareness and consciousness to your breath, then I think, you know, it makes profound differences in, like you said, every aspect of life.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Is there anything else that you could, you know, that you would kind of look at and consider as your kind of spiritual practice, or even just a practice of living differently now, consciously, more aware than your past?
Well, I don't have an actual routine. It's something that I've consciously know I've been needing to work on a little more is my daily routine, my morning routine, and yes, like you mentioned, this spiritual routine. But I want to talk about what I want to do more than what I currently do, because what I currently do is work. I wake up and I work and I work and I work and I work, and I slow down by breathing and floating. Other than that, I don't really slow down. And this backs up again to early in the podcast when I said finding balance, taking all these things on. I haven't found the balance I wanted to, but now I'm starting to take things off my plate where I can find more balance and get more of a practice, so I can move forward with some of these things. I would like to be waking up in the morning, focusing on my breath, stretching, doing yoga, and doing a bit of mindfulness meditation before tackling my day. I would like to be able to stop midday and do that similar same thing And same with the evening. I would love to be doing that three times a day. I've made goals to be able to do that, but I've never went. The field of resistance got me. I haven't went through with what I've wanted to get done. So I guess this year is just another great reminder of what I need to do.
Well, keep in mind that it's always a practice. And so it's like absolutely everything else that you've ever, become really good at in life. It's taken practice. And so I think it's important to set those goals and to focus on those things. And those are beautiful things. Like if you can have that moment of mindful awareness, we should say, three times a day, that would be huge. I think I don't do that. That's something that, I try to practice things like that. I try to incorporate meditation because meditation essentially is kind of the same thing where you're just slowing your breath and slowing your mind and allowing your thoughts to kind of drift and you go to this space. I try to incorporate that as often as I can throughout my day, but undoubtedly it's, life gets in the way and you get hectic and we, run from it sometimes too.
Well, yeah. Cool. That is my goals is to get to that point where I can do that three times a day. I might not be able to do this now, but when I'm in a van, I will have enough time to incorporate this three times a day.
Yeah, so. Tell me about that. Like, what's the plan with that? You guys are just going to fire up the van and head out?
Pretty much. Like my whole life, since I was 15, I sort of jumped in the workforce and I was in doing what they called the RAP program, where you work while you're in school and you get credits for what you work. So I haven't really had a break ever in my life. I haven't done any traveling. I haven't experienced anything. It's been go, go, go. And doing this whole entrepreneur thing, I sort of had enough and I'd want a break. I want to go back to collect the experiences and time things. So the best way we think we can do it is in a van. So our goals is to have a Sprinter van and drive down to the tip of South America, with best we can, and see all of this, land we can, and people and cultures and experiences we can get, and then drive back. And we want that to take a year, year and a half. But this year we bought a small van that we are building as a test van. So this summer I'm going to be taking, hoping, about 6 weeks off. And that's a lot more than my normal, 4 days off I get a year.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping to take 6 weeks off and drive the West Coast and, do some hiking, do some collecting of experiences, something I've never done, and sort of connect with myself a little more. And we're going to do it in a van and have fun with it in a van. So
that's awesome. That sounds way exciting, man. I'm jealous.
I'm very excited because I managed to get a voice recorder from you a few months back after the Float conference. I'm going to be using that recorder to bring with me in the van so I can do a van cast.
Nice.
A podcast from the van so I can share my experiences of what it's like being someone who never stops to slowing down and experiencing life.
Yeah, that's going to be way cool. I'm glad that you're going to be able to put it to good use.
Yeah.
Are you planning on coming down to the States?
I don't think next year, but the year after, we will for sure.
Yeah, so. Hopefully for the big trip down to South America.
Yeah, we'll be spending quite a bit of time in the States, and then, we're not going to put a time limit on anything. We're just going to do it.
That's ambitious.
Yeah, it's,
I'm sitting here thinking about that. Like I said, I'm jealous. We've got a van already, and we're proud owner of a minivan to haul all these damn kids around, but I would love to just, that's one of my favorite things my wife and I do. We actually, when we got married for our honeymoon, rather than planning anything and having some destination in mind, we just hopped in a car and took off and left. And, we didn't really pick anything. We just chose, do we turn right at this intersection or left at this intersection? Mm-hmm. And it was one of the, best experiences. It was beautiful. It was so much fun.
Yeah, I'm very, very excited to do that. My girlfriend, with who she is as a person, she was never somebody to spur the moment, do something or make decisions on the fly. She had to plan everything out. But I wing it. I wing it a lot of times. I don't know how I get by, but I manage to. And she's sort of taken some of that from me. And now she just wants to do the sort of wing it thing and see what happens, see where we get. So it's going to be very cool to, be able to experience something like that without having the constraints of, you know, time or schedule or other people wanting you to be here at this point for this certain thing. It's just something I've never done. I'm very curious, very excited, and I'm sure it will be a huge path for growth.
Definitely. This thought just came to me. I'm going to ask you, and whether or not you actually can, you know, come up with a good answer for every answer is a good answer, I suppose. But we're going to keep referencing it as kind of your spiritual journey. But this change in your life over the past few years where you've got more awareness in regards to things, has there been any aspect of you that has kind of in that awareness that you get, not just about your place in life and what you want and where you want to move towards and all that kind of stuff, but have you had any experiences or awareness in regards to your past and like specifically kind of like early, like your childhood and the ways that it affected and shaped and molded to where you're, you know, where you're at now? Or does that make sense? Because I think a lot of times people have to go back and look and not necessarily relive experiences or hash out traumas that they had as a child, but it's more like, for me, it's putting pieces together of a puzzle where you've got these pieces from your past, from your childhood, and you can use them now to fill in some places and some blank spots in the puzzle of your life. Have you done any of that or had any of that experience?
No, I haven't done much of that. I've definitely went, dug a bit into the past, just mainly while floating, set that as some goals to sort of go back in that library. But I haven't done much work with my past like I should be. I don't know if it's because I'm avoiding it because it's the past and trying to be in the moment, but I know it's very, those are the building blocks of who we are today. Maybe it's something I should spend more time working on is using that past.
I would definitely encourage you to. It's hard. Yeah. And that's why people resist doing it. Because a lot of times, you know, it's almost like we create this mindset of our life and our childhood and our upbringing and, you know, our teenage years and early adult. And we have this vision of it that we've kind of created in order to cope and manage with some of the other. Because undoubtedly, everybody goes through life and has shitty experiences. Do you know what I mean? It's always on a sliding scale. Some people it's minimal, and then other people it's incredibly traumatic and drastic. But we kind of wash over those and paint them in a certain light so that we're able to continually move forward and get past it. But I have found in my own personal experiences and when we work with people and things like that, you have to go back and almost kind of pick them apart and look at them. And that's the easiest kind of metaphor for me is, you know, they're just puzzle pieces that you almost have to go back and flip over and turn over, see them for what they are, and then you can see where they fit in your life now and how they put pieces of your life together now so that the picture is so much clearer. So you have these goals, you have these things that you want to be doing, and I mean, it's an easy thing. You talked about wanting to bring awareness throughout your day, you know, kind of setting it up to where you're more conscious about it and kind of force yourself into that space more. By going back and looking at your past and looking at things, you might get some more clarity, which then allows you to incorporate that practice more effectively and more, you know, so that you get more benefit from it. It's a possibility. Mm-hmm. I could be completely out in left field too. You never know.
I don't believe you are.
So when it comes to the podcast, because we, first off, that was such a wonderful experience for me. I mean, I thanked all of you guys at the time and stuff, but looking back, it was just, I absolutely loved getting the chance to sit down with you guys. It was super, super cool. The whole experience at the Flow Conference was really neat. But when it comes to the podcast, and people can go back and listen to that episode, I don't remember which one it was, but what are you guys seeing in the future as far as where your podcast is going to be going? I know you talked about doing those new episodes where you've got, you know, a group of people and talking about specific topics, but is there anything else in the works?
Not really. We're sort of at an interesting point right now where one of our hosts, Dylan Com, he just recently had a child. So that's a huge life changing experience, and he's sort of coping with that right now. And the holiday season's coming up. So we're in a very interesting time for the podcast, our podcast at least. But, our, you know, main goal, just keep hammering off weekly episodes, being connected with everyone and sharing what's going on with the industry as just a leg of communication for the float industry. But we do want to connect more with everyone. And that's why we're hosting things like the roundtable discussion. And we're going to be doing a Christmas party or a holiday party, whatever you want to label that.
For the podcast?
For the podcast. So it's going to be, I don't know the exact date here. I believe it's December 8th, but I probably just gave out the wrong date. So don't believe that date. Go to theartoffloat.com and check it out. But we're going to be having a holiday party where it's free. You can join us. We can hold 50 people online with webcams and microphones. And we're just going to be going over some fun stuff, having, you know, some, we encourage everyone to wear a Christmas sweater and, just join the community for a celebration of everything that's gone on for 2016.
That's way cool, man. So, that sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Well, Lance, I can't thank you enough. I want to talk to you more, but I got damn kids coming home from school and it's about to get loud and crazy here at the house. So give everybody just, you know, theartofthefloat.com, Float Shacks and Red Deer. What other kind of information if people want to contact you? Whether that you, we've actually got quite a few listeners up in Canada. That's been one of the neat things, is to watch our, I guess our listenership, our download base grow in Canada. So,
yeah, you can, if you want to reach out to me personally, you can, get me through email, lance@thefloatshack.com. The website for my float center is thefloatshack.com. Our podcast, the website for that is artofthefloat.com, and you can download that on almost any means for podcasts. And I'm also, I love Instagram. I have a lot of fun on Instagram, so you can catch me on there too. My tag is hallucinati with the underscore, which means to get lost in the mind.
So. Instagram's pretty awesome, I think. It's one of those things that I think is underrated sometimes when people think about marketing and ways to kind of build up, you know, a following in a sense. I know I've loved it for the podcast. It's been really nice. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Well, thank you, Lance. I appreciate it, man.
Yeah, thank you. It was my pleasure. I'm happy I could join you and learn from you. So yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. And everybody, go out and have a beautiful, wonderful day. And if you're up in Canada, it's probably cold, so make sure you put a coat on.
Please put a coat on. As soon as I surrendered and let go to the float, it did its job. It showed me what it needed to show. Slow down, breathe, be conscious of the breath. If you want to make the change, you have to do it. Breathing. Where I was actually able to look at myself, my body, my meat body floating in the tank. I didn't want that to be the vehicle I was traveling in. So I made huge, drastic life changes after that.